Are we rolling? Okay, so it's actually go, yeah. Yeah, it's Jesse Townley, the Shaman's Den. He may be European. We'll start with that. Can E U Europe European R U run for C council? Can Europeans run for the city council?
Yes. Males can too. All yeah. It's just a matter of getting in.
We have A G O governor that is European.
Yeah, he's Austrian. That's a little different. No, but I'm the governator. He's a bucket of trouble. But no, I'm from Philadelphia. I'm not European.
So. I'm from Philadelphia too.
There you go. You know, it's definitely its own place, but it's not as it's almost as old as, you know, the youngest parts of Europe, I suppose. But that's pretty much it.
How did? How did you get O U out H E here?
Drove out in 89. And with a bunch of friends, and never left. I was going to come out to join an art magazine of some sort, and walked into 924 Gilman, and just never left. So yeah, and that's how I got into politics as well, just because dealing with the city and Gilman Street and working with the different parts of the city, there's kind of some parts of the city understand who we are and what we do. Other parts were convinced we were drug dealing fiends with funny hair. So yeah, it was just it.
A. I. Ain't. Ain't you?
I may be a fiend, but I'm not a drug dealer. That's definitely one for the campaign literature. I may be a fiend. Yeah. But.
Why? How? What? Is G. Gilman Street for those who don't know, for your C. F. E. L. Fellow E. U. Europeans.
924 Gilman is an all-ages volunteer-run collective, and we've been putting on all kinds of underground shows, including your own, but mostly punk rock since 1980. Well, New Year's Eve 1986, and I've been there since 1989, and. It's kind of cool because there's always new kids coming in, and there's always this cycling through. Like, people get into punk rock and, you know, they do stupid stuff, and then they figure out there's something underneath it, you know, some kind of drive, some kind of, you know, sometimes they get into the art side of things, sometimes they get into the politics side of things, and then they run with it. And in the meantime, Gilman's there, and they can come and volunteer and, you know, learn how to do things like book bands, count money, be responsible. Because if people don't show up, show doesn't happen, and then kids show up. You know, I mean, it's really, you know, not to sound too much like, you know, a civics teacher, but it teaches responsibility, like, and like the depth of dedication. You know, you're working together and you're getting stuff done, and you're doing it in a collective, so you're doing it in an egalitarian way, and you're respecting each other mostly. You know, you're seeing all different kinds of art. You know, I mean, it's definitely a very human place. I mean, there's definitely its problems, but it's all ages. It's no alcohol or drugs are allowed in or around the club, and we work like on the official side of things. We work with like all the neighbors to help make sure that the garbage gets picked up, that the neighborhood isn't trashed after every show. You know, I mean, it's really a lot of work, and I think you would probably have to be a collective to actually do it, because it's so much work. Either that or like be able to charge a lot of money and make a lot of money to pay people to do this, because it's not, you know, you would have to pay people a lot of money to put the amount of work and time that they do into that place, like over the past 17, however many years, 18 years maybe. Yeah, so.
M-I-M-O. Most clubs, F-O-L, fold.
Yeah. I think the fact that we have new blood come in, and that there's this one man who came in about 13 years ago named John Hart, who kind of knows a lot about different politics, like the different players in the city. And he came in and helped us survive, basically. Without him, we wouldn't be there. But it's like, you know, a collective is like the people who are involved make it. Like, if you have a collective with 5 bad people out of 20, it's history, right? But if you have good people show up, it's incredible. And he's one person who showed up who's key. And he doesn't get that much credit because he's not really into the music. He's more into Gilman as the idea. And he told us who to speak with in the city and who would go this way and who would go that way. And it's just weird, like he's been, I would say most of the credit goes to him, and then the rest of us taking his lead and running with it in terms of just going and talking to the right people and saying, look, no, we're not a bunch of funny looking kids with bad attitudes. We are, but at the same time, we're also doing something great for, you know, for us, for you, for the city, for the country. You know, Gilman is this beacon to a lot of kids out there, and it's an incredibly valuable resource. And whenever it goes away, obviously it's going to go away. You know, it's going to close at some point. Who knows when? Who knows why?
But why?
Why? Why will it?
I am still here.
Yeah. True. Yeah, okay. Yeah, you know, it'll go on forever.
Do you? No. Something I don't know. Are we D-O doomed to F-A to failure?
I think the optimist in me says we move on to even better things. So maybe, you know, Gilman will close down, but we'll, you know, then we'll just open the entire neighborhood. You know, we'll just have the entire block of 8th Street.
L. O. S. Lose. We. Will. Some day see L C L O S E lose the someday we will close. It is like saying someday we will get a D E V O R divorce. It's like, it's the same thing as saying, well, someday we'll get a divorce.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess. But, you know, but anyway, yeah. I see what you're saying. Regardless.
What? What is he saying? Are you saying, what are you saying? Because he's, no. Is that what you said? Yeah? Because you said, I see what you're saying, so he asked, what is he saying? Oh, no. What? Were you going to say? Oh. What were you going to say?
Well, what I was going to say is, looking back, you know, regardless of what happens to Gilman, how's that? I'll skip over that whole clause.
Forget about that.
Whatever happens to Gilman, we'll look back at Gilman and say, that was this crazy experiment that worked. Well, it's not an experiment. I mean, it's based on proven practices of collectivism, blah, 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 blah. But it has worked so far since 1986. You know, and it's gone through different changes, and it's been kind of flexible. But we'll look back on it and say, wow, this place is a revolutionary venue, you know? And it stayed there for so long. It's like ABC No Rio, you know? It's a countercultural landmark, you know? And, I mean, for instance, this guy, Jack Coran, just did this whole film about Gilman Street. And he basically talked to a ton of people over the years from different bands, different volunteers, people pro and con, and he talked to them and put together this really good... Well, okay, I hear it's really good. I haven't seen it. I'm actually, I think, the last person I know who's actually in the movie who has not seen this frickin' film. But apparently, like, the whole point is that it will help encourage kids and all over the country and all over the world to start their own Gilman, you know. And it's you know, it's such a unique venue that and place and feeling that it's not really unique, but it's just unique in that it's lasted for so many years. You know, like, people try to start this kind of stuff up all the time and it gets shut down by the cops, or they don't have the right insurance, you know, or they don't have insurance, you know, they do totally illegal, you know, like Burnt Ramen, which rocked, you know, the Slaughterhouse rocks, but, you know, how long will those places be around? Of course, John the Baker is his own, he's his own person, so
yeah.
He doesn't want to be legal, but if you were, had those kinds of spaces and wanted to be legal, Gilman's a great way, is a living example of how to be legal and survive for 18 years now. Oh, thank you.
But is not it P-A-R part L partly because it is in Berkeley?
Maybe originally. But I think it could be in any college town. I think the college town is the part that gives it enough leeway so that the people who are in the city government have been there, maybe with different music and different hairstyles, but they've been there. And so they understand, okay, the kids have to have a place to be kids and make a racket, you know. And I think, you know, someplace like some of the more liberal cities, it may work. Places like Philadelphia, you know, I mean, they like, you know, my hometown likes to bomb neighborhoods, so it's really not the best for, you know, venues. But they've been doing that kind of stuff there too. This guy Sean, I forget his last name, he's been doing a ton of shows in Philadelphia for years, you know, and they had a place called Stolid 13 there for years in North Philly or West Philly. Same kind of really loose venue, and they had touring bands come through for probably almost a decade, you know. And so it's possible everywhere, but here it's just, we started out in a completely industrial area, and that's one of our current things is, like, we're really involved with, like, keeping an eye on zoning and, like, the zoning law and, like, the West Berkeley plan, you know, which is something, like, you think of a punk club, you don't think, like, oh, I have to think about, you know, mixed use, light industrial, residential, commercial. You know, that has nothing to do with punk rock on the surface. But in reality, you have to know, you know, who your council people are. You have to know who to talk to. And, you know, it's really weird, like, the depth. But if you do it, I mean, there's always going to be, I guess I could see, there's always going to be, like, the council person who just has it out for you and just will not let you start a venue like this. But usually there's ways to get around that, and there's ways to talk sense to people. And if you can cover your bases and say, well, you know, this is an acceptable use for this area, it will bring business in, sales tax, you know, cities love that kind of stuff. I think it's a matter of, like, how you sell it. Oh, and that sounds so crass. I apologize. But it's true.
G-O downside of that is when T-H-O those people M-O move in there. G goes the neighborhood. Who's the those people? The punks? No. B. I.
Business.
Business.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, that was it. Business. Y. And yuppies. Etc. When they move in, there goes the neighborhood.
Yeah, I mean, gentrification is led by the artists, right? And the freaks move in because it's cheap. And then you have, 4 years later, you have Soho, or Soma, for that matter. You know, it's a problem. And what has to happen is, well, we can't move because we would never find a landlord as nice as ours. Like, that's another thing, is to have a landlord who is like, you know, I like what you're doing. I don't like you spray painting on my floor, but screw it. You guys rock. Okay. You know, like, that's something we have. That's the other missing, the unsaid ingredient, I think. Yeah, it is a problem. But that shouldn't stop you from moving in, you know? Like, just because you might be the first part of the gentrification process doesn't mean you shouldn't.
But then they want you out. Once the gentrification happens, then they want you out.
So you got to fight it. I mean, we're doing it.
K-I chemos, E, etc. Chemos in San Francisco.
Yeah, you have to basically keep on fighting and say, look, this is the people like us are why this area is great, and you have to protect us. And I think out in the West Coast, maybe in the West Coast, like, people are learning. It's like, it's like the gentrification process is so, it's the same everywhere. You know, it goes freaks, artists, homesteader, yuppies, overpriced, and, you know.
IHA had D-O-N Don Jelinek as a guest when he was running for mayor, however many years ago that was. And I P-I pinned him down, pinned him on the A artists not being able to afford to live in Berkeley anymore. He said, well, they can live in Oakland and just come to Berkeley and do their art. They can live in Oakland and Richmond. But I said, then they are not voting in Berkeley for you.
True enough. Yeah.
T-Y-Y-U yuppies are voting. Yuppies are the ones that are voting then, but not for, but not for you.
Well, I think that's part of my plan. I mean, I'm representing a district that's pretty well off. District 5, it's right up the hill. And
what is it, what does District 5 cover?
District 5 is pretty much between Sacramento and Spruce, from Rose to Kensington.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a lot of the hills. It's not all the hills. Mm-hmm. It's not the very top of the hills. But it's a decent mix. There's some working class. There's some middle class, upper middle class, some well-off folks. It's mostly, Berkeley politics. So they're mostly moderate and progressive, which means, you know, everywhere else in the country they'd be, you know, flaming liberals, you know. But
yes.
So it's more of a moderate district, you know. And I think if you talk about artists and you talk about art and music being integral to a city, and it, you know, a city's identity, and I think especially in this time you're going to have a lot of support. I mean, look at the downtown arts district. You know, I mean, I think they need a club down there, frankly, and I think they need. A 24-hour restaurant in Berkeley would be
a.
great.
Yeah. Oh,
you
my
know.
God.
Yeah. When elected.
See? Oh, a couple of clubs.
Yeah.
And a couple of all-night restaurants.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I mean, to stay a world-class... I mean, we already have this university who own half the city anyway. We have all these different plans, and, you know, these world-famous people come and speak here and play here and, you know, the Bay Area. I mean, we have to, like, people always go off about, well, we have to gentrify Gilman Street, for instance, because we want to extend 4th Street. It's like, well, that's nice, but what you do then is you get rid of the industrial base, what's left of it, you get rid of the artists, you get rid of more low-income housing, and then you become more and more of an Orinda, which is a pleasant town. But I don't want to live in a pleasant place. I want to live in Berkeley. I want to live in a place that's alive. And I think most people do. When you put it like that, people are like, you know what? Yeah, you know, we want
riffraff. D. Oh, Don Jelinek did not get a artist's need to live in Berkeley, live in the city here. He thought B.E. Berkeley can S.H. ship them in, ship in the artist for flavor, for flavor and color.
Yeah. I mean, I like a lot of what Jelinek was saying during that whole election. I mean, on the basis of, you know, when you're going to go to that level of politician, it's not a secret. I'm not a Shirley Dean supporter, for instance. And that's who that's who he was running against the last time.
Yeah, I think so.
So between the two of them. But at the same time, what happens when Oakland makes that same decision? When Richmond makes that same decision? Then you're busing artists in from where? Tracy?
H. Which they are heading
exactly
in that direction.
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, like Manhattan. I keep on going back to Manhattan because that's, you know, your promised land for a lot of people. You used to have the Lower East Side, and before that you had Soho, and now you have Brooklyn, Queens, Staten Island, you know.
And B, and Brooklyn is getting built up too now.
I mean, Hoboken used to be the place to go. Now it's more like Weehawken, you know, or wherever in hellhole in northern Jersey, you know. But, I mean, that's what happens. And why do that? We have artists here. Why? Like, you have to have a community. You have to have someone who, you know, who is going to do your art. And also you have to have, you know, you have to have people who are going to do the service jobs. And even environmentally, you want people with service jobs to live in the city because they can walk to work. They can ride a bike to work. Mm. They can do a short car trip or a short bus trip instead of a long one. You know, it's like all these different things are so interrelated. And you can't just X out a class of people, especially not a creative class. I think that's really selling the entire place very, very short.
And that don't H.A. happen when you use a FFO affordable housing as a CO a con to get large structures built.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's a whole other bucket of pain is development.
L. That is what you are. S. T. E. Stepping into.
True enough. Oh yeah.
Are you? S. I. C. Are you sick? Or what?
Well, let's see. Could you use the army buddy diving on the grenade analogy, you know, to save everybody else, you take the blast. But no, somebody has to do it. And somebody has to step in there who is not in, who is not a realtor, who is not in as closely connected business-wise with developers. And step in and say, let's take a big look. You know, does this make sense? Where it is, what it is. Is it realistic? Are you really going to have a nonprofit be able to pay that much money for this space, for instance? Or, you know, are you really going to, does it really make sense to whatever the, you know, the details are.
I and B U I build A F F affordable housing P E period.
And what?
And build affordable housing, period, as opposed to the con.
The combination, yeah.
No, the con where, yeah, the combination where they use affordable housing as a con to get a big contract.
Right. Well, and also, you have to look at, is it actually affordable? Like, that's something
right.
that, you know, I mean, a low-income housing is like 80% of median rents or median salary. I'm not really sure which one it is because, you know, I don't have my notes of... but you know, but it, is that really affordable? Can someone who has a, you know, 40-hour week minimum wage job afford it? You know, can someone who's on SSI afford it? Probably not. And Section 8 is getting gutted by the federal government, so, you know.
Before or after the new cuts? You heard about the cuts that the attendants are supposed to be getting?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, I mean, obviously I come from Easy Does It, so it's really a big, it's going to, it could really decimate, you know, people are living independently. It's crazy.
We, us? Yeah, us.
Yeah.
That's what we live off of, attendant money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I was talking with a friend of mine today, and he works in he works for the Los Angeles County doing placing low-income people in low-income housing who are on SSI for mental reasons. And he was like, you know, it's exact parallel to the work I was doing at Easy Does It, you know, because it's so much easier for people to live in their own apartment instead of being locked up in an institution. You know, it was just, and, you know, and you have people like Schwarzenegger who are like, oh, well, we have to cut this, you know, entitlement program when it's a lot cheaper than the alternative. You know, and if they were actually...
But the money, and the money is going to corporations rather than people.
Yeah. And it's really bizarre. I mean, how the Republicans can be so blind or... willfully blind. Okay, it's not... Okay, yeah.
Right.
I'm speaking to the choir here.
Not blind.
Okay.
They're putting the money where they want it to be.
Their supporters who are not getting that money, the fact that they're that blind, that's the problem.
Right.
You know, like, obviously people who are getting the kickbacks and the political support from the big donors, they know exactly what they're doing. But, you know, the Joe Schmo who's like, you know... I want smaller government. I don't think welfare mothers should drive big Cadillacs, blah, blah, blah. But they should look into that and say, oh, wait a second. You know, who are these huge, you know, hospital companies coming in?
S-I-N. Since. When. Have. You S seen W welfare mothers driving big Cadillac driving anything.
True enough. Yeah, I mean, but you know, that's their stereotypical image of, you know, that Reagan raised and all the other people raised back then, you know, and they just ran with it. And Clinton, of course, said, we're going to reform welfare, you know, a.k.a. dismantle it. And it's really improved the country. Not at all. You know, so it's really tough. One thing I've been thinking about doing, well, this is more like platform stuff that I can stop. If you want to keep on going, I can start talking and it would just be...
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, one... Okay, I'll make it really short, I hope.
Well, people in District 5 will be watching this on BTV, so might as well get it out there.
This is one part of the platform that I thought of actually on my own, but it's completely, it's been done before. And I realized that after I figured it out. But basically, you do a local kind of work projects administration kind of thing, a local WPA. And I guess in the 70s, there was a federal program called CETA, C-E-T-A, where you would have under and unemployed folks get trained and become union members to fill in the gaps in the workforce, in this municipal workforces, and then they would be able to do the job. They would be union members, so they would be protected. They would get job training. And this was all done with federal money. Mm. Of course, at the time, that was before Reagan and Bush and Clinton and Bush. So, you know, there was still money that they were willing to give to that. But we should do that on a municipal level. I mean, why not? Well, since the cities, all the cities in California are screwed. The state is screwed. The counties are screwed. Everyone's screwed. Everybody knows that. So we could apply to foundations. Call up Bill Gates and say, hey, we have a great program for you. You can help do the first municipal public-private CETA or WPA and get, you know, people in low-income parts of Berkeley, get them working, have them fill in the places where the workers in where the municipal workers right now they can't do because they've been, you know, slashed and slashed and slashed every year. The budget just cuts more and more and more. And have them fill in where they can be trained quickly and easily, and they can get job training, and then, you know, once the job is done, or once, you know, the economy picks up, then they have job training, and they might have a jump up in getting hired by the city permanently, or they can use those skills and move somewhere else, you know, in terms of like a different job, you know, not move somewhere else, but you know. And I was actually, my mom is an ex-librarian in the city of Philadelphia. And I was.
We're very big library fans.
Oh, great, great. Yeah. Well, my entire family are readers and writers, so English teachers, poets, librarians, so, you know.
We will T not H. Hold that against you.
I know. But so I was telling her about this, and she was like, well, it sounds kind of like anti-union. And I was like, no, the whole point is that they're union members, so they're protected. And that way the unions come on board, and they're basically they're part of this whole job training thing. And then so I got in touch with her old union, the head of her old union at the library. And then she realized, oh, wait, there's this whole program called CETA that I worked with people in my library who were community members who we trained, and they ended up getting jobs as librarians later on. And it was the exact same program, but it was federally funded. So the idea is you take that and you make it funded by, you find money somewhere in the city, and you find foundations, because the government's certainly not going to help. You know, maybe how do you work it? That's kind of why it's a platform plank, and I'm waiting until I get elected.
How?
Fill it in.
Does H. G. I. Gilman Street F. fund itself?
All through the door, the front door. That's it. We don't do any grants, no foundations, nothing. It's really crazy.
You take how much a cut of the door do you take?
50%. Mm. Actually, now it's right now it's 45%, but it's basically 50%. Mm.
And no B A.
No bar.
No bar.
Mm. Right, which, I mean, for everyone who is watching this, I mean, that's how clubs make their money, is by selling alcohol. And since we're no alcohol, we have a snack bar which sells sugar, basically. You know, and that's it. But, you know, that's actually, like, we don't make any money off of that. Like, the club itself, they're financially separate, sort of. But,
pen, the, see, I, L, no, can the city, L, E, A, learn from Gilman Street?
I don't think so. I gotta say, you know, unless they want to become a collective.
I am E D educating him on air. B E, because I want him to win.
Thanks. That's great. I'll try to redraw the districts so you can be part of the District 5. Just this one little house. No, you know, I really wish Gilman did have grants. I think that would be...
No. No, he's saying could that is the whole, that is the W, R, wrong... answer. G H H E R here
is
here you have something that W that works, meaning Gilman Street, and has worked mm-hmm. for almost 20 years.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
And H, here, you have some thing that does not work, meaning the city.
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think like how it would, you know, how, what, I think, okay, if you want a serious answer, okay. Of all things, I think the sense of community, the sense of, this is going to sound really pie in the sky, but the sense of community, the sense of working together, and you have a common goal, which I guess in the city's case would be to exist as a vibrant, alive community instead of a bedroom community, or a community for the upper middle class to wealthy. And I think the cooperation, one of the reasons I said no originally is because that describes every collective that works. So it's not just Gilman. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think, one thing actually, this is kind of on a sidetrack. One thing that I would love to see is for the city to give preference to collectives and cooperatively run businesses as part of the whole... when nonprofits or whoever apply for contracts, there's a bunch of different things like if it's run by, if a company is owned by a woman or a company is owned by a minority, et cetera, like there's a certain amount of weight that holds in terms of giving contracts. And why shouldn't worker-run collectives have some sort of weight in that process as well? Mm-hmm. You know, you think, when you think about it, like that's something that could really help the city as a whole, he says, segueing into overall themes, to cut down on polarization. Like you have the city, like I said, like we were talking about before. You know, you have your liberals and you have your progressives. They're really, really close on the, you know, on the scale, and that's most of Berkeley. Yet they fight like cats and dogs, like they were, you know, like it was, you know, Spain, 1939, you know. But they're really, really close. And so if they can figure out how to work together, like you have, like in a collective, you have to work together. Otherwise, your collective fails. So the city has to take that and run with that.
W-E.
Within reason.
Well, I am I miss D E A Dean and Worthington D B L A Black C O M E Comedy. You miss Shirley Dean and Chris Worthington's Black Comedy.
But.
And B A T E Bates is B O boring and not B E T better boring and not better than Dean.
I have heard anything I disagree with so far. Yeah, I mean
W H I which I W A warned Chris Worthington before, but and before the election on this show. Right. And I H E and I heard he now agrees.
Yeah, you know, the Chris and Shirley show was was entertaining, but in terms of, you know, I run the meetings at Gilman Street, and we limit them to 2 hours every 2 weeks, and still it's like pulling teeth, you know, it's agony. It can be agony. And, you know, the city council meetings were incredible, as you guys know. I mean, as everybody watching this knows, if you saw them, they were unforgettable. But, so the entertainment factor has definitely gone down. But I think, you know, I mean, Bates is, he's an interesting, I go back and forth.
B. C. Be careful. Right.
Well, you know, that's half of being a politician, right? Being careful.
Being careful.
You know? This is, you know, on the job training. No, it's, I think you can say that I think Bates is someone who is used to working in the legislature. So there's all kinds of deals that are made, and it's all, you know, there's a huge range of opinion. And so once you get the deal going and you have worked all the kinks among the major players, then you can just go forward. There's no community right in your back, literally in your backyard to deal with. You know, but here in Berkeley, you know, everybody's incredibly connected in terms of plugged into what's going on with their city, and or a lot of people are, and enough people are, that if you try to do those kinds of, you know, deals that may or may not make things run smoother, if you do it the wrong way, then people are going to yell, even if they like what your end result is, they're going to say, why, you know, what are we, chopped liver? we are your community. We elected you, and don't forget it. And so I think he's used to dealing in that more legislative way. Like Jerry Brown, same thing. Like he came back from wherever he was and you know, running for president and all that. And then now people expected him to be Jerry Brown. He's going to make Oakland XYZ ABC. And look at him. He is not, he's certainly not well liked among people who voted for him. And, you know, half the city thinks he's an idiot. The other half thinks that he's completely out of touch.
They. Okay. They know he is an idiot. And they know he is out of touch, both. Yeah.
I mean, I'll give me a couple of years to keep on watching Bates, and I'll be glad to tell you exactly which of those two is accurate. He's not an idiot. Like, none of these people are actually idiots, but they're certainly... It's like this, you have to shift, like coming back to local politics, you know, I'm going to be knocking on every door in the District 5, you know, we will be, hi, I'm running for, you know, how you doing? Like, and those people will be calling me.
F-D-I-D-O, Don Jelinek. That's how he ended up on the show, because he knocked on our door.
Oh, great.
It's actually him and Linda Mayo came together politicking, and they knocked on the door, so we brought them into the living room and set them down with Frank.
Right.
M.A. Mayo would not be on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. W. H. I. Which. S. A. Says. Volumes.
Yeah, you know, it's
L. She. C. She. F. I R first V O T E voted for that the first round of votes, the censoring votes for the public access channel, she voted in favor of the censoring first round. But then the city attorney. When the city attorney wrote it up and kind of changed it somewhat, that's when Linda was one of the ones that switched away from the censorship. F R from S E sexual. Sexually explicit, that was the original wording.
Mm-hmm.
To
obscene. Right. Who knows what that means?
Well, when they read that in this council meeting, Frank just started shrieking and screaming and laughing because he knew that there's no way they could say that win if they called us obscene. Because he had gone through the whole thing with Jesse Helms. When Jesse Helms tried to had the GEO investigating Frank a couple times as an obscene artist.
Oh, really?
Yeah, this was in like 90. And, you know, they couldn't get anything. And so Frank knew once they called it obscene, we were all set.
Well, isn't it, like, legally, can't you not censor what's on the community stations anyway? Or is that a simplification?
It, they, N, E, they never, use the word censor. Frank said he's never met a censor who thought they were censoring.
Right.
They were just moving it. They just wanted to move the time slot.
That's right.
Originally, wasn't it to like 4 a.m. or something?
2 to
6. 2 a.m. to 6 a.m. And then they compromised and made it midnight to 6.
Right.
Even though the rest of the country is 10 p.m. for adult programming.
Yeah, 10 to 6 a.m. then.
Yes.
Safe Harbor. I mean, from Calix, obviously, I know.
Yes.
The whole FCC. the whole FCC.
But M. Mayo. J. U. Just. Could. Could not. G. Go. For the obscene thing. So she switched her vote.
All right on. You know, I mean, I think a lot of it really is, like, I know I wrote letters to all the council members, emails, you know, and I encouraged everybody I knew to, you know, I mean, I got a reply from, I think, actually Linda Mayo as well as some of the others, saying, you know, well, this is a really difficult issue, blah, 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 blah. I mean, to me, I mean, I've always felt about, you know, the public airwaves. So the public
airwaves. Oh. What is difficult about it?
Well, I didn't write. You would have to ask Linda Mayo. I don't know. I mean, to me, I think, I'll tell you what. To me, and I bet this is probably your guys' opinion as well. A television, a radio, whatever, you turn it off, you turn it on. If you don't like what you're listening or reading or watching, stop reading, watching, or listening to it, period. Like, it's really simple. And especially when it comes to, like, community access to the airwaves, there's so little of it to try to screw with it and to try to, you know, try to dictate what can and cannot be on the air when it's us, our city, you know, our, you know, we are, you know, we've met the enemy and he is us, you know. That's
B. E. Betty Olds was R. Really? R. E. A. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
Two. P. You pull the plug on BTV altogether if that's what it took to get us off the air. But that is not censorship.
Yeah. Right. Apparently not. You know. Yeah, it's honestly, like, you know, that's like that illustrates something perfect. In terms of, you know, we have this madman and in Cheney and his little puppet W up front, you know, just destroying the earth, destroying people's lives all over the world, and we're worried about, you know, this show, you know, we're worried about Dr. Susan Block. I mean, please, I mean, there's real problems. There are people starving on the streets of Berkeley. Okay, what we do or do not see by our own volition of turning, you know, the channel changer is so minor compared to the reality that's, you know, on our streets and that's across the world, you know. I mean, there's body bags coming back from Iraq and Afghanistan.
B. By BTV. S. H. O. Shows. That, and BTV shows all that, and has that kind of stuff.
Yeah. You know, it's, well, it's literally community media, but, I mean, it's, you know, it's a good news source for all kinds of different things. You know, what, you know, some of the stuff I watch, I'm like, oh, geez, you know. But that's fine, you know.
Like, why? Like, why? Don't. G. I, Gilman Street, have a show on BTV?
you know what? We're actually working with this. This woman has taken videos of a whole lot of bands, and she's putting out. Her plan is to put out a DVD every quarter or so, or maybe every month, of specific bands, and just release it, and we could sell them at Gilman, and she can sell them online or something. Like, that would be an easy way to, like, you know, and instead of having endless public service announcements, you just throw on, oh yeah, Gilman tape, you know, DVD number 73, you know, just throw it right on. You know, like, I mean, you know, you listen to pirate radio, and a lot of times, you know, they're in between DJs, so you have a six-hour lecture.
And Lover will play them.
Great, yeah. I mean, maybe it's a collective, so who knows where she's at in terms of, like, putting that whole thing together.
People are not utilizing what we have at to the fullest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
BTV should be on 24 hours a day.
Mm-hmm.
WI with SH shows FR from G Gilman Street STA STAR Starry Plow etc. ELP Elephant? No.
La Pena.
Well, what's a definite article difference?
Right. La Pena, right.
Well, you know, Calyx has the show Calyx Live every Saturday night from 9 to midnight. But we have, speaking of community resources, we have a show. We have, like, probably 30 years or more now, 40 years worth of live shows that are recorded, everything from blues to, you know, to improv, jazz core, to punk rock, to whatever. And the show is basically, there's something from the reel-to-reel archives that's for the first half hour, then we have a live band and an interview, and then we end with another show from the archives of whatever. And those two, the live band is sandwiched by, it could be Black Flag, it could be John Lee Hooker, it could be anything, you know, and that's the, like, that's a perfect example of, like, you have something that's definite, you have a band that's coming in, you have real live people there, and then, you know, and you have this archive stuff, which is fascinating, you know, sometimes it's great, sometimes it's, well, there's a reason it's an obscure band, you know, but sometimes they're great bands, and that's really, like, that's a perfect example of, like, how we use, Calyx uses the kind of archives of shows and bands to fill in time, but it's a neat way. Like, whenever I see, isn't Reality Check on BTV?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, I see that, I'm just like, wow, this is great. And I think some of the stuff they do is just like, whatever, you know. But fine, you know, but it's interesting, and it's, you know, it's well done, it's cut pretty quickly, you know. You know, not all the bands are my liking. I think some of their, well, you know, whatever. But the idea of it is great, and to see live acts on it. I saw the Feeders, the show where you guys played at the Justice League.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like I went to that show, and then, like, what, 3 days later, it was on BTV. Was that you who put that on?
Oh, did we put that on BTV?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, thanks. Yeah. I was like, I was there.
Right. We, my, B, A, backup band. The Feeders were Frank's backup band at Gilman Street.
Oh, right.
In the 80s. Sometime in the 80s. That was when Tim Yohannan was still running it. And he... one, Frank had performed at Gilman Street, and afterwards he said, you know, Frank, because he was a big fan from the Outrageous Beauty Review days at the Mabuhay.
Uh-huh.
And he had said, I think, you know, if you did, he was very respectful, if you did like more current stuff, because Frank was singing along with taped music at the time. He didn't have a band, and he would sing like Sonny and Cher songs and Joe South, Walk a Mile in My Shoes, and just all these like corny message songs. That would be like him a half hour singing along with stuff.
Right.
He said, if you did more current things, and so... So we Frank talked to Frank Discussion and told him about it. And Frank Discussion was, So Frank said, how would you guys like to be my backup band for my next gig at Gilman Street? And they learned all of Frank's songs. So they learned the Sonny and Cher songs. They learned. And Frank Discussion sang, because Frank needs to sing along with somebody. So Frank Discussion learned all the words to the songs, too. So it was Frank and him singing all these songs. And we did the whole set like that at Gilman Street. And at the end of the set, we're walking off the stage, and Tim's like at the far end of the room, and he just like, I give up. Whatever you want to do.
Tim was great. He was, you know, like he's somebody who's like, you know, one of those people who makes a scene. You know, like he was so important to so many different little scenes, and you know, I mean, I can totally sing on that. Ah, you should have a back band. You know, but
F E Feeders will be playing at a benefit for a lover at the Slaughterhouse. John the Baker is putting the show on, and Frank's band, the Trotic All Star Band, will be playing also on the same bill. It is Fluff Girl.
Oh, cool.
Saturday, June 26th. Saturday, June 26th.
Okay.
I'll write it down for you.
Yeah. I'm sure I'll see flyers all over the place, too.
Yeah, that's right. I'm sure will.
Rad.
Yeah.
We're actually, somebody, my friend from L.A., he's putting on shows. He's part of, like, Not My Name L.A. and Bands Against Bush L.A. And he's putting on a... They're putting on a benefit for my campaign in San Pedro, of all places. Actually, Long Beach. But anyway, Southern California. And that's all on my website.
You can not do A, B, E benefit in Berkeley. E, I, either. You can't do a benefit. That's right. We're in Oakland. The other benefits have been in Richmond. We did. We tried Ashkenaz.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't have us.
Well,
we tried G. Gilman?
What did they say? Was I there?
M I N O Miners?
Oh, right. Talking about, well, yeah. This is where
W H I which did not S T stop T I Tim.
I agree. It's a collective. I get outvoted, basically. Like, yeah, I mean, it's really, I kind of look at art the same way I look at radio, TV, and books. If you don't like it, walk out. You know, everybody's born naked. They see themselves naked whenever they take a shower, if they take a shower, you know. And it's not that big of a deal. And it's only because we make it a big deal that it becomes such an issue. And part of that, frankly, is the collective's decision to say, you know what, we are going to, because after we had the Insaints play and there was all this crazy stuff went on. You know, do you remember the Insaints? They were a band led by a dominatrix who has since passed on. She was...
You know who it is? Oh, Frank's aware.
Okay,
familiar.
Yeah.
Yes. W.E. Wendy O-matic?
That's the Plasmatics.
That's the Plasmatics, yeah.
Marion. Marion from the Insaints. And so we avoided trouble with the city with that, but the city knew about it. And so we decided, the collective decided that we're going to keep a lid on explicit acts. I mean, the Insaints were pretty much sexual performance art backed by a punk band. Like, that's the simplest way to put it. Whips and bananas and all kinds of stuff. And, you know, I thought it was really entertaining. But whatever. but it's certainly art, and it's certainly creative, and it's certainly, it should be in. But my view pales next to kind of real politic, I think I'll steal from Henry Kissinger, but unfortunately. But I think we just basically decided, you know, we can't take that risk, that the wrong people in the city would take Insane show and blow it out of proportion, and all of a sudden we would be seen in the media as XYZ ABC.
D E define P U punk.
I agree. I didn't vote for it. You know, it's really, I come from, you know, bands like Blatz. You know, we were a bundle of chaos. We were a bucket of chaos. That's what we were. And we did all kinds of crazy stuff on stage and off. And, you know, I'm someone who thinks very, well, that's the
and
frisk.
This is Jesse's current CD, The Frisk, that you'll soon be hearing on Lover. Can we E X P E expect that F from this band, The Frisk?
Live? You know what? I made a conscious decision. I didn't want to be the guy, oh yeah, that's Jesse's band. Yeah, he's naked again. You know, you have to try different things with different bands, I think.
T-R-A-N-S translation? No.
Well, if you want a short answer, yeah, that's exactly right. But if I could jump back to the benefits, the reason I brought that whole thing up is because my buddy in San Pedro had talked to somebody from the feeders. So it all comes full circle, because he was talking to them about doing a benefit for me in Long Beach. So that would be really odd if we were both having the feeders, you know, raise money for us. But it would have been very nice to have that.
But why in is there no place in Berkeley to have a benefit?
I'm having a benefit at Gilman. I'm having a benefit at
N U Nude.
Well, it depends on how much money we raise.
Did you S I sign A O A an oath.
Oh. We should do like a strip donations. Like, if you know, for every $200 piece of clothing goes off.
Get K Chris.
We're also having a show at the Short Club, June 6th, I think. It's like a Sunday afternoon show. And so, like, bands like, I think, hopefully, Fracas will play. Troublemaker, a bunch of bands. So.
Where?
That's
were,
different.
Were you the one who A.S. asked me for a video for the video show at Gilman Street?
That was me. I don't think it was me. I've stayed away from the video side of things there. But yeah. But yeah, so we have a show at the Store Club. I can push that kind of thing on the show, right? I mean.
Oh, yeah. When is the Store Club show?
June 6th.
June 6th. So it's probably not going to air on BTV until after that. It's best to just give your website here so that people can just check. Because it'll play before, you know, soon.
November.
But no, it will play, like, you know, during the summer.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, it was a great show, June 6th, at the Store Club. yeah, it's townleyforcouncil.org, which is townleyfor council.org. And people can put it into Google or whatever they use to look for things, and it's there. I mean, hopefully, like places like Punk Voter are hopefully going to, they're talking about maybe endorsing me, gathering endorsements right now. I mean, you know, I mean, I'm running for office, and it's really, it's a serious thing. In terms, it's not just a symbolic campaign.
H E Hey I E E N D and E N D O endorse. I endorse you.
Thank you. Great. Live on the air. Political history is being made.
You need M O more of a P L A T platform. You need more of a platform. And be on time.
Yeah. Yeah, I apologize. We weren't on air before when I apologized, right?
No.
I'm sorry. I was late. And I got caught up in dealing with computer stuff. So, you know. I have a full platform. And I just haven't been talking about it, because, you know, I mean, it's traffic, disaster preparedness, budget, social services, traffic, parking, traffic, and, you know, how we get along on the roads. So, I mean, but it's, and obviously, like, stuff like environmental issues.
How about B U S S E S buses T H R O through out the N night, having the buses run all night.
Bus and barge go all night. I mean, we went to New York, and we stayed in right at the top of the Holland Tunnel in Hoboken, whatever city is right there. I don't forget which one it is. You know, and there was a PATH train that ran all night, and we felt like, wow, we live in the sticks.
Because that's the way we always feel when we come home from New York.
Embarrassing.
O-U-S-E. Run all night. The buses used to run all night here. And the BART.
The BART was all night?
Yeah, so it's a while ago now.
But I remember the buses were running all night when I was here, when I came out here, and it was 75 cents. But, you know, the problem is, like, obviously, like, the city doesn't have any control over the buses and BART. We can just kind of influence them and try to make them do what we want them to do. But, you know, they're getting slashed. I mean, the whole idea that a government agency has to pay for itself is this weird Republican boondoggle.
Yes.
You know? It's incredible. Like, you don't, like, it's a service. It's not a business.
The W H O, the whole I D, idea of P U, public transportation, is P U, public transportation.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's you know, it's like when they try to have Amtrak pay for itself. You know, we're this every year or every four, you know, every year we're this close to being the only civilized country without a national rail service. Talk about embarrassing. You know, I mean, at the same time, like, the stuff and the things on my platform about transportation locally is basically saying, look, we aren't defined by what we ride or how we get around. You know, someone who is a pedestrian 1 minute might jump on a bicycle, become a bicyclist, or become an automobile driver, or become a public transit user. You know, someone in a wheelchair might drive, you know, become an automobile driver or a public transit user, just like that, you know. And the whole idea of saying that we're defined by, I'm a bicycle rider, I want everything pro bike and screw everything else, or I'm a pedestrian only. And the idea is that we're in a society where we have to deal with the fact that there are cars. A lot of people need cars for different uses. There's definitely a lot of completely wasteful, useless rides people are driving where they don't need to be driving. You know, there should be more carpools. Carpools should be 24 hours on the freeways. It's ridiculous that there aren't 24-hour carpools. You know, I mean, it's backed up all the time. Like, commuters are not the only people who use public transit or the roads who matter. The rest of us who don't necessarily drive or, you know, use public transit during commute hours, we matter too. You know, 24 hours. We live 24 hours, and we should be able to get around 24 hours. You know, so the idea is, like, you know, drivers have to share the roads, and everybody has to share the roads together.
L-I-M, limit, the, E, C, O, N, economy, it limits the economy by not having 24-hour public transportation.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And, you know, if you're a service worker, or I worked at Uprising's Bakery, you know, I lived 3 blocks away, which is great, because if I didn't live 3 blocks away, I would have to take the bus there. And, you know, I was a delivery driver there, so I would have to get there at 4:45, 5 a.m. You know, and public transit doesn't run, you know, or it runs you know, the last one goes at like 3:30. Well, I'm going to sit outside Uprising's Bakery, you know, at, you know, for a couple hours. No, you know, it's my job. It's not my, you know, my reason for being. You know, I want to be able to basically take the bus and go where I need to go whenever. Otherwise, people are going to drive. And so it's really, there's so many different, there's no simple solution. And part of what's getting in the way of getting to any kind of solution is people being completely polarized by saying, well, all cars are evil. Well, you know, people cross the, you know, pedestrians cross the street and don't even look, and they are mean, or, you know, bicyclists use a whole lane when they should only be using half lane. Whatever the, you know, the people going on and on and on about whatever their particular preferred mode of transportation is, they need to understand that we're all in this together. We are all on the streets, and it's a big, big problem, and, like, we don't need people bickering at each other about, like, whose mode of transportation is more, you know, which mode of transportation is moral as opposed to, and whose transportation is immoral, you know. I mean, you have to get away from the overall and go to the details. Like, you know, do people in the hills, for instance, you know, they're not going to be riding a bicycle down the hill, especially if they're not physically fit, or if they're...
Or you, or up the hill.
Yeah. You know, what if you are doing your weeks or months shopping?
D. O. Down the hill.
Yeah.
O. Okay.
Right, yeah.
Up the hill. No way.
Yeah. You know, and, you know, like, you read the Daily Planet, and people are, like, going back and forth about, like, well, people who have, they're just, it's just.
But. B.
Oh, sorry.
E. R. But Berkeley did have A. T. R. A. I. Train.
Mm-hmm. The key route, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Why not B. Bring it back?
Good luck. It sounds great to me. I love trains. You know.
I. May. R. A. R. Run. For. M. For mayor.
If elected, I will bring trains back to Berkeley. All over Berkeley. Go for it. No, that'd be great, you know. I would love that.
And I will be bring M A M A and Ma and Pa stores back to Berkeley. Not C corporate chain stores.
Yeah.
That M move.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm really glad Edie's is gone. You know. The
Edie's Ice Cream. That's the place that they got rid of to put, what, Gateway or?
Eddie Bauer,
right.
Who is now gone.
Who's now left.
Well, that's another thing. Like, you know, in getting ready for this run, I've been talking to all kinds of different people. And a friend of mine runs a furniture store in West Berkeley. Mm. And he really felt that people were, among other things, like, putting so much emphasis on, you know, well, who can we get in here who will bring the most amount of sales tax? But the thing is, you know, you can have your Eddie Bauer come in with, you know, however many thousands of square feet, but they don't live here. You know, they're controlled from Chicago, in their case. You know, and when the people in Chicago say, you know what, we got to cut all the stores over 70,000 square feet, doesn't matter where it is. You know, they just pull them all, and we're left with an empty storefront. But if you have, like, that's a whole other thing I put into the whole platform, which, again, is, you know, it gets a little wordy, obviously, but you know, have incentives for local ownership. If someone wants to sell, who's a local business, you know, maybe there's some way to create programs to encourage other local people to buy that business, or, you know, maybe like low-income, you know, small business loans that are directed at having local people own local businesses. Why not? You know, I mean, that's the kind of thing that I think we can really do.
The 70s, I knew all the owners of all the stores in Berkeley. This one, when we were doing the Outrageous Beauty Review, once a year, Frank would go around to all the local businesses and ask if they would donate prizes for the gala anniversary show to give to the winner. And he got, you know, we did this a number of years, and he got to where he knew all the owners. He'd go in every year. Right. They knew him. They'd give him lots of really cool things. I would go to the stores, and hang out, hang out, and develop relationships with the owners.
Right.
But now this place is usually, it's just a manager, and they change in the 80s, things changed.
Yeah, it's, you know, I mean, one thing, I mean, coming from Philadelphia to here, like, I was struck with, I mean, it's a small town, you know, and people, like politics is really easy to get into. Like, you know, doing this in Philadelphia is ridiculous. There's no way I could run for city council.
You would get killed.
Yeah, I could always say, oh, I'm related to Frank Rizzo somewhere, you know. But,
L-E-E, sleep with the F-I-S.
Yeah, sleep with the fishes.
Sleep with the fishes.
Yeah. You know, I would. But here, you know, it's a small town. I mean, it's a small city. But, you know, I mean, you really can hang out and know people, and you can call up your council member and say, hi, you know, I have this gripe, you know, and most of the time you actually get through to them, more or less, you know, and you have like a public comment section at the city council meeting, you know, you know, people pack that place for all the different kinds of things, whether it's, you know, for, you know, I don't know, Easy Does It or swimmers or libraries or this is or that or whatever. You know, people are right there in people's faces and working with them and working against them at times, you know, and that's a great thing about this town. For me, I mean, coming from a huge city, you know, I think we do a lot better in terms of encouraging, like, local ownership. And I think it's really, like, that goes hand in hand with, like, encouraging collectives and worker-owned cooperatives, you know. I mean, it's a way of doing business that says, you know, it's not all about the bottom line. It's about the C word, community.
And not C H A I chain stores.
Yeah. I mean, Walgreens down the corner there, you know, when they close, they're just going to move. They don't care. They have no connection to your Office Depot, another perfect example, you know. You know, when they go out of business or they get bought by Home Depot or Office Max or whatever huge chain, you know, they're going to leave. And we'll be stuck with a big old parking lot and an empty warehouse. Cool. That's great, you know. It does nobody any good, you know. Like, if you had, you know, maybe you had... It's so tough, though, because, you know, people are not as well off as they were 10, 20, 30 years ago. So, you know what? It's tough to shop at the right places that are ethically on top of things. You know, it's really hard not to go to Target or to Safeway or to whatever beach chain.
But Berkeley, B-E-C-A, because there are less S small businesses.
Yeah. I mean, think about it. Like, where do you go to buy auto parts? I know there was a small independent store on San Pablo, but it hasn't been there for probably 8-9 years. I don't know. I know the two big local chains, or the two chains that are local, you know. I go to El Cerrito to find some more chains like that. That's it, you know. Where do you go to get appliances? You know, it's a tough question, you know.
No. C. H. Choice. There's no choice.
Yeah. So, it's, you know, obviously this is like a huge issue that is the entire, you know, the entire U.S. is looking like, you know, suburban Los Angeles, which is disgusting to me.
But we are T.A. talking about B. E. Mm-hmm. Berkeley.
That's true. And so we should step forward and, you know, take charge and lead the way, you know. I mean, we're not the only anti-chain, you know, city or group of neighborhoods or communities at all. I mean, people are rejecting Walmart all over the place now, you know. But we can certainly take the lead in, like, figuring out new ways and better ways to, you know, fight the chains. And doing things like encouraging local ownership of, you know, having some sort of, you know, you could have some fancy name for it, like, you know, some kind of like, not a heritage, you know, a heritage ownership program, you know, so there's some kind of local...
T-R-Tri-C-O, community?
Community ownership.
Community ownership? He's like coming up with a title for a program that would kind of make it seem more glamorous or something.
Yeah. Community ownership, that works fine.
Yeah.
But, you know, and you know, Berkeley's the leader. You know, people look to Berkeley across...
The L.A. The last time I was D O down T town. I counted five T A L, tall buildings, tall N, E, new buildings.
Mm-hmm. That are going up or have just gone up?
Yes, that have just gone up. G, going up.
Mm-hmm.
That are going up.
Yeah. Yeah, people love to build because, you know, the developers can make a good amount of money off them. I mean, development is a whole other, you know, we could go there for hours, right? I mean, it's connected to business, certainly, but I think...
So, do I H E here, A, C, O M
M commitment to F to F I
fight that
depends on what kind of development. Depends on where.
Now that is a politician.
But it's true. No, but that's true. That's certainly politician's answer, but it's also true. Look, we have to have, like we were talking about before, low-income housing. That's actually low-income, right? Where do you have it?
But are they L-O low-income?
That's a great question. You know, 80% of median income is not low-income. You know, I completely agree. So
I am I'm asking for a commitment to F I fight
for low income, for actual low income housing? Yes.
And is that right? Yes, that's right.
Oh, certainly.
And not R and not T A L tall buildings for the rich.
What about tall buildings for the low income?
What about tall buildings for the low income?
Oh,
do have you S seen any?
Not in Berkeley. No, well, here's the question though. What do you call tall? Like, to me, tall depends on where it is. Like, if you put a three-story building, that, you know, like on this corner here, or maybe a four-story building here on the corner next to the BART tracks, that's completely inappropriate. That's totally wrong. If you put a four-story building downtown, it fits in much better. You put in a seven-story building, a 15-story building, that's way out of line.
What? But when the R E S T the rest are 2-story.
Well, you know, so sometimes it comes down to what we want and what the impact of, like, a four-story building is going to be. Do we want a lot more people downtown, living downtown, low-income housing downtown? If it's actually low-income housing? No?
Again, have you seen any?
I have not seen any. I mean, okay, how about this? I think the current way of doing it is not getting actual low-income people into decent apartments in Berkeley. And that has to change, okay? And I think the trading off of, like, oh, if you put in 20% of low-income housing, you get an extra story, that clearly is detrimental to the city. I mean,
S. So, you are committed.
You may want to commit me, but yes, I am committed to that. I mean, you have to have smart. Okay, that's too much of a buzzword. You have to have appropriate types of buildings in appropriate places. Like, if a place is good for actual low-income housing and mixed income, I think is, from what I gather, like everybody says, it's better to have different economic incomes in the same place. So you avoid, say, you know, you look on the south side of Chicago, you see these huge apartment blocks that are projects that are living hells.
Mm.
Nobody should have to live there, right? So the idea is you mix.
No.
No.
The. Are. The rich should have to live there.
The people who run HUD should have had to live there.
Then.
Yeah.
Then you will not have them anymore.
Yeah.
If you make the rich live there for a while.
No argument, you know. Well, wasn't there a slumlord who...
I may run...
on that? Wasn't there, like... I want to say that... Maybe this is just wishful thinking, but that there was some slumlord who was sentenced to live in his own nasty apartments. Is that familiar?
I heard that, yeah.
Yeah. You know, I mean, that's, you know, a great way to do it is, you know, if someone's a slumlord, you know, make them live in their own slums and say, I'm using kind of outdated jargon, I suppose, but, you know, I mean, that's one way to do it. In terms of Berkeley, you know, you have to have a diverse types of people. And
we... H had diverse on this block when we moved in. It was a mixed race, mixed income. We have lost that.
Yeah, you know, it's, I mean, in one way, I mean, I think the fact that the dot-com bubble obviously burst, like that, I think that's lessening a lot of pressure. But it's the kind of thing, like, once you ratchet it up to a certain level in terms of housing prices and rental prices, it's so hard for it to ratchet back down. It's like, you know, gasoline prices, for instance, or the price of, you know, milk or eggs. Once you get up to a certain point, you're not going to... Capitalism says you can't go back down. Well, because that's the beauty of the capitalist system. You know, no sarcasm, please. You know, I mean, it's completely ridiculous.
Oh, you, our, C, O, U, N, counselor, council, our council person. When is this about the fight about next door? Is that right? We had a single family structure next door to us that the man who lived there, the old man who lived there, passed away without a will, and when a developer, a local developer who owns a lot of property around this neighborhood, bought it with the intention of putting a condo type two-unit structure there. And we knew actually that the zoning wouldn't allow that because it wasn't big enough. Who? S.A. Who said... At one point, he would be L Right. At one point when he was trying to sell the idea to the neighborhood, he told people that him and his wife were going to move in and his brother was going to live in the other unit.
Right.
And we said, do you really believe that? Because everybody was going, no, he's going to move in, so it's not going to be that he's renting it. We said, do you really believe that?
Right,
obviously, he had no intention of doing that. And so we were really the ones that were trying to rally the neighbors to, you know, to the fact that we did have a say in it. We didn't have to just go along with it. B, E, because he was going to build a structure that would max out legally what he could put on that lot.
Right.
And it would, everybody around here has a lot of privacy in their backyards. That unit would be able to see this street, the street behind us, and everybody's backyards all over the place, not to mention the light and all that stuff. And we legally were in the right. He wasn't. And yet everybody's attitude was guys like him always win. And our council person, when we asked for her assistance, told us that people like him always win and that we should just try to get on his good side so we can get whatever little bit we can.
Right.
Even though we were legally in the right about it. Yeah, and we actually did win and he built what we wanted him to build.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, see, that's the kind of thing that people have to realize, like, this is a small enough place where you can actually do that, you know? And you can actually, I mean, at Gilman, okay, we got blindsided by Pyramid Brewery, moved across the street. Mm. When that place, when we first heard about it, it was a fait accompli, and that was probably the most defining moment for me. It was like, God damn it, I'm really pissed off, and I'm either going to sit around and mope about it and complain about it, I'm going to get off my ass and do something, which is what I'm doing right now. So you can blame Pyramid for, in part, for my campaign. but you know, at the time, they...
How to make revolutionaries.
Yeah. I know. Oh, jeez. And, you know, you could... That, you know, and obviously, well, you know, I suddenly jumped to, you know, Iraq right now, and, you know, how many revolutionaries are we making by everything we're doing, you know? But jumping back to Berkeley, I was convinced, personally, I was convinced that, you know, we'd have this huge bar, like the second biggest restaurant on the mainland, in mainland Berkeley, which, you know, the first is, of course, Fingers, and this was the second largest. But since it was, kind of an extra use to the brewery, which, you know, we all love the brewery. We're like, okay, great, union jobs, it's manufacturing, that's what the, you know, zoning is for. But this ancillary use was for, you know, however many, 200, 300 seat restaurant, you know, which is clearly not industrial. And it's a huge, it's basically a huge brewery, a brew pub. It is a brew pub right across the street from this all ages, alcohol free, you know, youth run space. Mm. This is not the best of ideas. And we rallied the community. We lost. But in the middle of it, we ended up, because at that point, everything was stacked against us because they had, it was, and that's the problem with development. I think people hear about things way too late in the process. The community hears about it way too late in the process.
Yes.
And then we freak out because it's like, hey, what are we, chopped liver? You know, and I think that's a problem where the parts of the city that deal with development, the Office of Economic Development, the Zoning Board, the Planning Commission, they have to work with the people in the neighborhoods from day one. The developer comes in your door at 9 a.m., you know, wherever that developer is talking about developing, you know, that neighborhood association should have a call at 9:30 a.m. The same day, you know, or whoever. Because that's why people freak out, and that's why, you know, things get dragged on, because people, there's no communication until it's way too late. And that's what happened with the Pyramid thing. I mean, as it happened, Pyramid, I was wrong. You know, the images of, you know, stampeding herds of drunken frat boys coming across the street and, you know, screwing everything up over at Gilman did not happen. People, we didn't have a bar. They weren't interested in coming in, which is great. You know, our older patrons, not me, because I still don't go there just because I'm stubborn. But, you know, like, my wife goes there. You know, when she goes down to see a show, she's like, I'll be across the street. You know, I don't want, I'm going to wait over there for the band I want to see, you know. So she, you know, she has a beer, you know, maybe some fries or whatever, while waiting for the band she wants to see. So it works out great, honestly. And they're really good neighbors. I'm kind of, you know, I'm still shocked. They're great neighbors, actually. They fought with us against this company called Daikon, who were just idiots, you know, who, you know, moved away to Richmond. And they may or may not still be in business. They were like a technology company of some sort. But the whole process was skewed towards developer from day one, towards Pyramid coming in. I mean, and honestly, I can see why. You know, they're not a chain. Well, they're a chain of like three, you know. They're a moderately big business. They're industrial, and they're coming toward the industrial area. So, yeah, you want them in Berkeley. Heck yeah, you know. But where do you have them? And what do you, you know, if it was just the brewery, nobody would have cared if you don't, like, oh, yeah, great, whatever. You know, it'll smell funny in the neighborhood, but it already smells funny down there, you know, because it's industrial. But having a big bar was so inappropriate, at least on paper, you know. The process was broken at that point. I think it's getting better.
They did not tell T.A. talk to you. That seems like the real problem, that you weren't involved, you weren't let in as part of the process.
No, we found out about it when it was really far along. But I mean, I got to say, Pyramid,
like, it just happened to work out, but it could have not worked out.
Oh, it could have been completely, you know, we would have been talking about Gilman Street in the past tense, basically. Like, that could have easily have happened. But, like, the people at Pyramid, they flew us up to Seattle to see their operations up there, like people from Gilman Street. And they were really, like, at first they were like, okay, who are you? And then we were able to talk to people in the city to talk to them to say, hey, you guys have to pay attention to these kids over at Gilman Street because, you know, they've been there since 1986. And they're your neighbors. They're the community you're moving into. You know, so since they were the new kid on the block, literally, they realized, oh, okay. And they got along with us, and they were really friendly, and we negotiated things in the use permit that we felt would protect us, including a stoplight at that corner, which is actually really good because, like, people have been hit, and we figured, okay, we have, like, our kids on one side of the street and, you know, these hordes of drunken frat boys who never really materialized on the other side of the street, and you don't have the traffic light, you're asking for trouble, you know, especially because, you know, people drive down because of public transportation not being all that great in that area. You know, they drive down to Pyramid, and they drink beer, and they drive away. Not the best of ideas. So, you know, we got a traffic light in there, we got a security guard in their use permit, like all these different things, and we worked with them. And that was probably how it should be done, you know, in reality. Like, later on, like, and also I think a lot of it is, like, the coordination among the city, it doesn't always work too well. Like, when this Daikon Fiber Optics moved across the street, they were across the street, and again, we had already been there for a decade before they moved in. They started complaining about us to somebody in the city, and the Office of Economic Development came down on their side. They were like, oh, yeah, we'll make sure that we shut those kids down. We don't know what they are, but whatever. And they started telling the cops to hassle us. And we talked to the beat cops, and we were like, what's going on? And, they were saying, well, we're getting orders to crack down, basically, you know. And so we went to the people we knew in the police department and the zoning board on the city council. We said, look, what's going on here? Who are these people? We want to talk with them. They won't return our phone calls. They won't, you know, we leave notes for them. We give them all this information. They don't call us. They don't contact us. You know, we're their neighbor. We're the community, you know. And eventually, but the weird thing was, like, the Office of the Office of Economic Development was completely off the same page from the zoning board and the city council and the police, who all liked us, you know. But they were the same city, you know, the same neighborhood, the same neighbors, and completely different objectives and completely different, you know, points of view. And that kind of stuff has to stop, you know, because you just become, you have more of the same kind of thing where people have blinders on, like, we need, you know, we need middle income apartments, or we need, you know, a new Gaia building, or we need a arts district, or we need whatever. But
that is why, what, M, A, Mayo said. You're talking about next door. She used the need for housing as a justification for putting a monstrosity there.
Right. Yeah, I mean, apparently you guys figured out a better way to do it, which is more appropriate for the community, which is great.
Well, we did have to fight, and I think it seems like most people believe it when they're told that a guy like him is going to win. Like, even our neighbors, even after we won, and we said to them, you know, we won because of what we did. And they said, oh, I don't think so. Like, they still don't get that it was us standing up for what should be, what we wanted was made it happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
No, it's really important to, you know.
They are told you can not SWI swing
win
if they're told you cannot win by their council person.
Yeah, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah,
totally. You know, and I think there should be, in every development, there should be the developer, whether it's a non-profit or for-profit, whatever, you know, the city, you know, in terms of like the zoning board, the design review, planning, and the neighbors, the community. Like, those are the three parts of the puzzle. Like, without one of them, it doesn't go forward. You know, like, that's really important. You know, like...
But S O so will so will you be you N R E A unreasonable, like W O R Worthington, or R E A S O, or reasonable, like Linda Mayo.
I'm going to give you a politician's answer. It depends.
is
unacceptable.
The wrong answer. That is M A Mayo's answer.
Are you asking if I'm going to fight for things when they're wrong, against things when they're wrong? Of course.
And R I and risk being seen as unreasonable.
I came up in punk rock, right? So I have a really thick skin, and I'm actually really shocked at how thin a skin a lot of politicians have. Like, you hear stories of people saying, oh, yeah, you know, I really don't work with that person or this person because they disrespected me during this campaign. And it's like, you're a public servant? Come on, this, you know, you have to have a thick skin.
You. But.
Well, I'm getting to answer your question.
Right.
Okay.
He's working up to
yeah,
it.
Yeah, no, but I say that because.
I am not like Mayo, M, most, P, R, E, S, press.
No, I know. You like the BBC, you actually ask questions and, you know, and pursue the person, no, for an answer, which I wish everybody did, you know. No, so the reason I said that thing about having a thick skin is the corollary to that is that I expect that I'm going to be dealing with each issue separately. So each when I say each issue, you know, whether it's this development, that development, this store coming in, that store going out of business, you know, this medical marijuana initiative, this, that, you know, whatever it is. And for the Creeks Ordinance, for instance, you know, someone like Betty Olds is really in favor of a lot of the Creeks Ordinance, where, so maybe environmentalists will be working with her on expanding it or doing whatever they're going to do with it. And then they'll, you know, maybe then at the same time, Betty Olds will go on record as being pro more high-priced apartments in a certain area, for instance. You know, whatever the issue is. So, I mean, since it's local politics, the way I look at it, I don't look at it as one person being unreasonable or one person being reasonable. I look at it as one person.
But he's talking about, like, on a particular issue. W-O. Worthington is willing to look the fool. Are you?
Well, I don't plan to look the fool, ever. I mean...
Did you hear what he said? He doesn't plan to look the fool, ever.
But...
You?
If you're asking me, am I going to take, you know, once I make up, you know, am I going to take a principled stand and not be swayed? I have to. I mean, that's part of my makeup. If something goes against what I believe is right for the city or for that particular issue, I'm not going to vote for it. Or I'm going to work to make sure that it, you know, if it's something like Pyramid, you know, where it's already down the tracks, you know, I'll try to put as many either poison pills or things to mitigate it as I can, you know, put in a traffic light, put in security guard, you know, restrict the hours of operation, whatever I can do. You know, and at a certain point, you have to figure out, you know, and that's politics, you know, figuring out, like, where you spend your political capital. But
are you a capitalist?
Me? No.
S. So. You don't have capital.
Well, that's why I'm fundraising.
Like, I am being the F-O fool. Fool? Now? You're being the fool now? Willing to look unreasonable? The way he's giving you a hard time, he's willing to look unreasonable. Is that what you mean? Can you D E describe what you mean by act the fool? And you mean in this situation or just in general? Yeah, well, like with Worthington, we've seen him many times take a position that appears like he's just kind of off somewhere. Like he's not kind of doing it the way he should be doing it. He's not working. He's not maneuvering. He's just like, this is, you know, this is it. This is it. He's just not movable. And that appears like he's being unreasonable. Whereas you have all these other people kind of negotiating and saying, well, listen to what you have to say and da-da-da. He's saying, no, I won't support that. And that appears to be unreasonable, and that's what I think what Frank is calling the fool. Like, you know, this isn't the way you're supposed to be when you're a politician. W, H, I, which are, was, what, D, R, O, drove, D, Dean crazy.
Right.
And I think B A Bates.
Mm-hmm.
So he's risking you know, the possibility that people are going to just dismiss, so there's Worthington again being that way. On the other hand, you can depend, you know, from our point of view, you knew you could depend on him to stand up for what was right, and he wasn't going to care how it looked. He wasn't going to care the risk involved. And
well, like I said, like the question is, where do you spend your political capital? You know, and I can see both.
R-U-A. Capitalist.
Okay. Yeah. Where you spend? Yeah. Okay. Rephrase that. But if by running for office, I've chosen to become part of the system. To a certain extent. But it's true.
Emma. I S a mistake.
Say
that is H A L half of your C A P capital R I right there.
That is half.
You said a mistake. That is half. A mistake, period. That's half of your capital right there.
Because I am coming from...
The mistake is him saying that he's choosing to be part of the system. Is that the mistake, saying that?
By doing that, you've given up what you believe in.
Oh, you've given up half of your capital right there by saying that.
By saying you're going to be part of the system, you're...
Okay, that was a cliche. I'm so glad you don't work for the BBC. Actually, I wish you did. That'd
you?
Be great.
You need me. A, as your M manager.
You know, it's true. I mean, I am coming from a place, you know, coming from, you know, I'm a working class, young resident, you know, 33 going on 34, you know, for Berkeley, that's young.
You, punk.
Punk. And, you know, but at the same time, you know, the thing is, like, people hear punk even now, and they're like, oh, yes, blah, blah, blah.
No. That is no. That is who? That is who you are. That is?
That is who I am.
Why? Someone like someone would vote for you if they want a politician know who is in the system, they will not vote for you.
That's true. Yeah, I mean, jeez. I'm running as who I am, okay? I got to say, though, I mean, it's a fact I found that people who are going to vote for me because I've been in these bands and I've been a part of the scene and part of collectives, they're going to vote for me no matter what. Wait. You really should be my campaign manager.
I am not talking about PU punks in that LI limited way.
Okay, yeah.
FRAN, frankly, punks are punks are not a VOT voting block.
No, but I think when you say that you're talking about punk in a broader sense, you know, you're talking about the creative people, you're talking about the people who aren't locked into a specific career track necessarily.
I am talking about people who are T.I.R. tired of P.O. politicians who are in the S system.
Yeah, and people who are, their whole role in life is to become a politician, and their whole idea is, I'm going to go and serve on this or serve on that. I'm going to do everything and make those steps to get to whatever my overall ambitious goal is. And, you know, yeah, I mean, I'm not that.
That is where C.A.P. capital C.O. comes in.
I actually disagree. From working in collectives, when I say political capital, I'm talking about the ability, whether it's from community to one person, like a community in a collective, talking amongst each other, or say I go to a collective meeting, whether it's Uprising, whether it's Gilman, whatever, and I say, I want to do X, and the entire community says, well, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. We don't want to open a bar in Gilman Street. You know, that's against everything we want to have happen. And I have to make a choice. Am I going to push this and go to a vote that's going to lose, or am I going to use the different relationships that I've had and work towards things that are more, that are more along the lines of what the collective as a whole want. And that's, when I say political capital, I'm not talking about in the more general sense of, you know, well, you have to, in the legislature, you know, like that Tom Bates, for instance, or Jerry Brown talk about political capital. Mm. I'm talking about the one-on-one, who do you work with and how do you work with them? And, you know, in a collective, as, you know, any kind of egalitarian situation, you aren't always going to be on the same side with everybody all the time. And that's one thing that, since it's a city council, it's lowest common denominator. It's almost the lowest common denominator. Probably the neighborhood associations are probably, in terms of like the government structure, the hierarchy, you know, but it's so close to the community that you have, I guess the cliche is strange bedfellows, right? You have different people working together on different issues. And I think the idea is that you want to be able to make a stand and stand up for what you believe is right, whether that's in a collective or on the city council. But at the same time, the next issue that comes down the pike with that collective member across the room who voted against you, your idea 2 minutes ago, the next thing, they might be their idea, and it might be something that you really agree with. Or they might, you know, and so that's the kind of political capital I'm talking about, is people-based and not the standard. I should probably come up with a different term for it. I'm sure there is a different term for it that I'm blanking out on right now. But that's the kind of political capital that I'm talking about. So, I mean, maybe that helps kind of explain.
But B U N unreasonable A C T U actually gives you, but being unreasonable actually gives you more F friends, FR freedom, more freedom to do that.
Well, I think I think we're thinking of like what, for instance, Chris does differently. Like I see Chris doing probably what I'm talking about doing, and taking a specific side on a specific issue depending on what the issue is. I think sometimes, for instance, in his case, maybe he. I don't think anybody on the city council is above quote unquote playing politics, like thinking, okay, I'm going to make this deal, and I'm going to vote this specific way to please a specific constituency, even though I know my vote is complete, is not going to change the way, I know that the vote is going to go against me. But because I have this one constituency that I want to please, I'm going to make this symbolic vote. And it may or may not be something that is in the best interest of the community. I'm actually thinking of a very specific situation. But where...
What is the specific situation?
I'm not going to go into it. No, because, you know, it's really like, you know, because that's my...
Two. I. L. O. O. Look. Like the S E N A Senate.
But I mean, I think it's that kind of political grandstanding is just no.
What is the situation that you're thinking of?
It's basically just like it's like the. Without, I really don't want to go into it, but the basics of it are, is it's political grandstanding. It's like making this point where the person who's making it doesn't really believe in the point that they're trying to make, but it's just to buy some political points. And it's, just, you know, when the the thing that is the better thing to do for the people you're concerned with is the exact opposite. And that's the kind of stuff where, and it wasn't, and it was, and not being able to explain that, like, I can tell you, being someone, I mean, the way I operate, this is a little long, but I swear I'll get to the point. You know, if I can't sleep at night, then I know I'm doing something wrong. Because I just lie awake and, like, I think, like, oh, I should have done this better. Not necessarily better, but what I'm doing in this case is wrong ethically. And I want to be able to sleep at night, basically. Okay? It's really important to me. So when I do something, it's justifiable. Like, I will be able to say, the reason I voted for this or the reason I voted against this is because of X, Y, Z, A, B, C. And that's what was missing from this particular instance. That was, it was, to me, it seemed to be clearly a case of making a political point for just political currency. There we go. I'm avoiding this, the other C word. Mm. You know, just for political currency to make some points to use in a different fight later on down the road without any justifiable reason for making that vote. And that's the kind of crap that is, well, crap. You know, we're a city. We all live together. We have to be able to justify our decisions and our stance. And that's what's not, and that kind of stuff goes on, and it's wrong.
And not B P A I paid to M A make the S T A R T E state of the city S P E E speech. You're talking about Bates, the state where he did his State of the City speech at a paid event.
Yeah.
two paid events.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to pay to see somebody I love, you know, that is representing me. You know, screw that. Especially if it's a public, you know, if it's a public thing. No, you know. I mean, if I'm going to a fundraiser for that person, that's whatever. That's my own choice, but. You know, I mean, the State of the City, like, they don't charge for the State of the Union. That's like more of a comedy show, but, you know.
This was for the C-O-M-M-E. R. C.
Commercial.
Commercial. Commerce.
Chamber of Commerce. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, business, small business especially, is important, but there's more to the city than just the Chamber of Commerce. And we have to, you know, I mean, I think the people in charge who are elected should be speaking to all of us. You know, I mean, at the very least, they could. I mean, the very least, it should have been, you know, at a city council meeting or before a city council meeting, whatever. I mean, that's the standard operations, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, if he wants to make a speech to whoever he wants to, that's fine. But the State of the City is, you know, it's probably indicative, and in Berkeley it was probably a bad move, you know, in terms of Berkeley politics, you know. People who don't like Bates are already, you know, they're already sharpening their knives already from, you know, from before you got, as you got elected, with the whole papers thing, you know, where you threw away the papers for, you know, and the Berkeley Republicans fought him, you know. From that day on, like, stuff like this is just needlessly, you know, it's not, I think it's probably business as usual in the legislature, but it's certainly not business as usual in Berkeley, which you should know. I mean, he, you know, he, I don't know if he was, did he grow up here? But he's certainly represented Berkeley for a couple decades, You know,
and he's married to
Lonnie Hancock.
Lonnie Hancock.
You know,
yeah.
They switched jobs.
Yeah.
You know. So you know, he should definitely know, like, hey, you know, give speeches to whoever you want for money, but you know, city stuff, give to the city.
Have I B E E have I been R E reasonable in this interview?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, I...
D, F, U, fuck.
I mean, you know, I mean, I'm somebody who likes, you know, I, you know, like the, when the, well, you know, like I'm sure you guys do too, the, you see the House of Commons, where they have the Prime Minister of Britain stand up and he has to answer to the other side of the chamber, you know, that's great, you know, and it's embarrassing and everybody says the wrong things. But that's, you know, that's, if I can get to...
Why? Who? Are? Who are you? Are you running against?
Larry Capitelli is the only person so far. Larry, he is the head of the zoning board, and he owns Red Oak Realty.
Wow. H. E. Hey. You talking to him? What's his first name again?
Laurie.
Laurie. Hey, Laurie. C. O. Come. On the show. On. D. O. Come on down. I. M. In. To. E. Equal time.
That'd be great. I would love to see you and Laurie talk. You know, I think, you know, I can only, you know, I'll probably have a lot more fun watching it. But, because, you know, I'm a DJ on KALX, and I'm actually not on the air now until November 3rd because of equal access rules, which is fine with me, you know. But I kind of wish, like, because once you offer, if it's not a news program or interview like this, you, like, KALX would have to offer Laurie the chance to DJ 6 to 9 a.m. Monday through Friday, which would be, I think, be great, you know. I think I would...
Why?
Why not?
Did, why did A. R. Arnold M.
movies play on TV? Because that was about the third or fourth question we asked as well. Because those are cable, not broadcast. So the broadcast stations, it's illegal for them to have broadcast Arnold movies, but cable TV is not broadcast, and therefore it's not regulated by the FCC, which, of course, as we know, is a whole load of hooey, a whole stinking tub of, you know. So, yeah. So we actually thought, like, the station manager and I both thought that we would be able to just change my air name and just go on air as, hi, I'm the Green Cushion, or whatever it is, you know, some... very Cadillac name, you know, but it's my voice. My voice cannot be on the air. Like, you know, my dog can go on and go, woo, 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 for Jesse, you know, but I can't.
I, high, pitch. Could you talk in a high pitch?
No. I know, right? I was thinking, like, I could do helium candidate, you know, it'd be great, but no, you know, I couldn't be even lower, you know, I couldn't do that, you know, it was just, it's, the like, the and the FCC is so, as you guys know, so crazy, because it's not well-defined, you know, what's obscene, for instance, what's indecent, some of it's well-defined, some of it's not, some of it's, what's a community standard, you know, what's a community, you know, this house and the house next door, or this house and the house across the street might have completely different moral standards. You know? there might be, you know, a Republican living across the street from me. We're in the same community. We believe completely different things, you know. It's the FCC is ridiculous.
P.
And not helpful.
U. Public access is J. U. Just that public access, not C. O. Community standards.
Right. So it's just public access, period. And, you know, maybe that's the way things should be regulated.
Yes.
You know, I mean, why not? I mean, the whole idea that radio is a pervasive medium and television is a pervasive medium is crap. You know, everything is all on off button. No one's, you know, it's not like, you know, Clockwork Orange where they're strapping you down and making you, you know, watch, you know, the Terminator movies, you know. You don't have to watch that stuff, you know.
So Mikey's going to have to switch a tape in 5 minutes. We've already gone beyond the one. We'll have to do this as a two-part show, which is fine. But he's going to have to switch a tape, too, if we want to keep going. You want to do a rap now, then? Okay. 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 U. W. I. W. O. You won some votes. You lost some votes tonight. Some votes tonight. Is that what you mean? You won some and you lost some tonight. But they Oh, now, no, you. But they now know you. Who? You. R. E. A. Really? R.
Great. That's all I can ask, you know.
And I... I need a J O. You need a job. I am available for a manager.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind.
The campaign manager. Campaign manager. No. Okay, you should give your website again, too. You need one.
You know, this is all on the fly, you know. But that's me, you know. I'm here. You know, if you want honesty, you got it, you know. I answered your questions as best I could, and, yes. You know, I think I'm really stoked because, like I said, like, I think every politician should have to be asked questions and nail down on what they actually stand for and how they're actually going to act. So,
I am H. E, I am here.
Yeah. You know, and
I am there. Worst nightmare.
Right on.
Okay, so it's Townley for
Council.
townleycouncil.org.
And that's TOWNLEY for council.org.
Yeah.
You know, it is about, you know, I'm somebody who is going to justify what I do, basically. And I'm going to explain it. And, you know, not everyone's going to agree with everything I do. But that's part of that's part of the hit you take when you run for this kind of stuff, when you step up and take responsibility for something. You know, whether it's at Gilman Street or Calex or wherever, if you're in a position where you're going to make a decision or help make a decision and lose or win, you got to be able to say, this is why, and this is what I believe. Yeah. So, there you go. I mean, I would be shocked.
G-H-E-H-B-K-L-A. Black. No, was it hey? And then K L A X Calex M A N A manage manager R was P I was pissed when, okay, we have 1 minute on the tape, when I, S.A. said I was nude in the studio on air. Okay, we're going to call that a wrap. This is the Shaman's Den, Jesse Townley, for council.org.
Thank you.
And this is the Shaman's Den. Your player's going to stop. Hit play again.
Thanks a lot, guys.